Okay, we're back at it.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah!
It's only one Oklahoma, and it was state. And it was state.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham. Colby Powell is traveling this week, so I thought I'd catch up with the man himself, Marshall Scott, the owner and operator of Pistols Firing blog. Marshall, how you doing today?
I'm not too bad. You know, nice, beautiful Friday. Hoping weather stays away from Bedlam softball this weekend.
Yeah, it's been nasty lately. Obviously, this is severe weather season. We're just now getting into May. It's kind of come a little sooner than we may have hoped. And it's kind of, you know, it's wreaked some havoc on some of the spring sports. But is there predicted weather tonight for softball? You think it'll be affected, or is it supposed to steer clear? I haven't really been looking at the weather.
I honestly don't either. It's based on my phone. No, but my phone is often incorrect, and I usually just wait on my wife as she's leaving for work to tell me, you know, what to wear today. but she didn't say anything, so I think it ought to be good today.
Well, in this time of year, it's not like your typical thunderstorm you can see coming from a mile away. This stuff just pops up, so hopefully it avoids impacting softball. We'll get into that. I want to get into some Steve Lutz news and notes with basketball, and of course spring football notes as well. But first, let's hear from Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop Cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at chrisuniversityspirit.com, and you can always hit up Chris's. They're best in the business. Get you some auto accessories as well as clothing and apparel. You always want the freshest gear, so be sure to stop by Chris's and they'll hook you up. And we appreciate them sponsoring the podcast for many, many years now, and we really couldn't do it without them. So we're very appreciative of Chris's University Spirit. Before we get into everything, Marshall, I do believe it's a busy time of year for you as well, besides just Pistols Firing stuff. Did I hear correctly? You're buying a house?
Oh, yeah. It's I guess, a long time coming. It'll be me and my wife's first house. So we started, we lived in a two-bedroom apartment. I'm trying to think of what it's called now. It used to be called Avenue East. People who know Stillwater will know that. The apartment complex behind Hobby Lobby, it's had a couple of different names. So started out there, two-bedroom apartment, and then we moved into this one, which is a one-bedroom apartment on the west side of town about 5 years ago. And frankly, you know, having been married recently, you just accumulate a lot of stuff. We have a literal grill in a box just sitting in our apartment that we've had since we got married last year. It's stressful time. Look forward to it being over with. We have a house. We just haven't closed on it yet. I guess maybe knock on wood there. You hear about the stresses of buying a house. And then when you're in it, goodness gracious, I'm just ready for it to be over.
Yeah. So you're still like in the middle of it. I mean, that's probably like, I hate moving. We had a really tough move when me and my wife moved into our house. Just, it was raining. Some stuff got broken. It was a bit of a mess, but the closing's the really stressful part. This was my first house that I bought. I'm much, much older than you. So you're well ahead of the game. I just kind of, you know, I had a house right after college that my parents helped me out with. So I wasn't making much money in TV, and then kind of bounced around for a while. So that was really my first big full house buying experience. And it is stressful. And it's kind of amazing that you can both come to an agreement and it can still fall through with the closing stuff. That is just, I'm like, this is the system we have. It's this much, this much can go wrong with it. It's kind of crazy once you get involved with it.
Yeah, and they need so many different things. It's like, why do you need this? Why do you need this piece of paper? Why do I have to go find this very specific piece of paper? I don't know. And if I'm already, so we got pre-approved, and this is just off the rails at this point. We got pre-approved, and it's like, okay, so I've been pre-approved, but now after pre-approval, I still need some, it's a mess. It's a mess. I don't understand it. It's a bunch of contract talk where you're signing stuff, and even if you knew what it was saying, like it's in, you know, doctor language. So it's a mess. It's a mess. Yeah. Buying a house is a mess.
So are you buying Gundy's house? Is that what I heard?
I am not. I think I could maybe afford a bath and a half of the Gundy estate, but not buying that one.
Yeah. That might be on the market for a little while. I'm not sure how many people can afford the Gundy ranch. So the dust is settled really with Steve Lutz. You were at the press conference. He's really hit the portal hard, trying to get guys coming in. We'll talk about some of the commitments, but the big news of note was his contract details were somewhat reported on. I think Scott Wright from the Oklahoman had it. It's a 5-year, $13.5 million deal. It kind of breaks down 2.4 the first year, then 2.55, 2.7, 2.85, and then 3 million the final year. And there's a whole lot of other, you know, minutia in the contract, Marshall, but I had been kind of hearing like closer to three, which I thought was pretty steep for a guy that was only making $600,000, for a guy that had only been a head coach 3 years. I think this is close to perfect. You wrote an article about it on Pistols Firing, which people can read much more of the details and kind of where he stacks up in the Big 12. But I like the way it escalates. I like the total number on it. He's not the bottom of the Big 12, kind of lower part of the middle half. I'm really pleasantly surprised with the amount of money they had to pay Steve Lutz to get him.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not – contract stuff and money is not really something that I'm take all that interest in. Obviously, it's people do care about it. That's why it gets read so much, and that's why we end up having to write it. But, yeah, it seems fair. Like you mentioned, kind of the middle area of the Big 12, you're hanging around – you know, his average yearly is, I believe, 2.7 throughout that contract. You're hanging around. Colorado paid Tad Boyle 2.6 last year. Bobby Hurley, who's coming in at Arizona State, paid 2.8 last year. Grant McCaslin, who Texas Tech hired last year, 2.9. So you're right, you know, there among that group. And I think that's a perfect spot to be, especially for a guy who's, you know, he's had a lot of success as a head coach, you know, making three straight tournaments, but he's only been a head coach for 3 years. So, yeah, I think they hit a pretty good sweet spot, both in length, in money earned. That way, you know, you're still showing that you're taking basketball seriously. You know, if you came in and really lowballed, you know, were, you know, bottom of the barrel in the Big 12, that would feel some type of way. I think just kind of to the fan base that you maybe didn't invest in basketball as much as other programs. But yeah, for a guy of Lutz's experience, kind of middle of the Big 12, I think that's a good spot.
And really, the thing that stuck out to me the most, actually, besides just his total numbers, and I know, like you mentioned, it's not the biggest deal in the world, a contract and things of that nature, but I do think it was important just coming off of the Mike Boynton era, so much talk around the big buyout that he had, could they fire him? I really think Chad Weiberg has learned a lesson from the Mike Boynton era, because Lutz's buyouts decrease every single year. It starts out at $6.75 million, so if he, you know, tears it up, goes on a big long run in the tournament, school's going to have to pay up big time to get him. Then it goes down to 5.1, 2.7, and then his final year of his contract, it's only 1.26. So the way that's staggered, if he has immediate success, it'll kind of stem the tide on schools coming to get him, like Illinois was able to swoop in and take Brad Underwood in the middle of the night. But if it's not working out by year 2028, it's only 1.26 million. That's chump change in the buyout world. So I do think that's an important note for me, that they learned from the Mike Boynton era in terms of getting out of a contract when they want to.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it just kind of, you know, it's good for the OSU side if things go wrong, which we saw in the Mike Boynton era, obviously. I'd seen between like 7 and 9 is what they ended up owing him, but then he gets, you know, hired by Michigan. So it, you know, disperses a little bit. But I think a thing of interest that could happen is, you know, say they have a really good year one under Steve Lutz, don't quite make the tournament. Year two, they make the tournament and lose in the first round. Year three, maybe they do the same. And at that point, you're going to kind of have to make a decision if because, you know, the buyout is going to be low enough for if anybody wants to come in and try and swoop them away, they're going to be able to. So I think, you know, by year two or three, you should probably have an idea anyways of kind of what's next. But I think it could get a little dicey maybe if he's had marginal success, but not maybe outstanding success, and kind of just where you want to go, but based on, you know, potential other guys coming in after him.
Yeah. And that's why I kind of think it's perfect. Like if he tears it up, I mean, you're going to obviously extend him and up his salary accordingly. That's the name of the game when it comes to contract stuff. And he had some incentives in here. I had to laugh. He gets $100K for the Big 12 title, $50K for winning the tournament, $50K for a tournament appearance, and then Sweet 16, Round of 32, Elite Eight, it's all $50K, and a Final Four, $50K. But the thing that made me laugh, Marshall, was he only gets $150K if he wins the national championship. Doesn't that seem a little low for a bonus? Like, yeah. Hey, congrats, Steve. Here's a $150K.
Yeah, I guess in order to get that, he would have to go through all those other 50Ks that he added. But yeah, if he wins a national title at Oklahoma State, I'd imagine somebody's willing to pay him like $3 million for that, much less, yeah, the $150K that was advertised. But yeah, it was just kind of funny going through that. And it's like, okay, if OSU made like a Final Four appearance, he gets $50,000 for that. And it's like, this program has been yearning for that success for so long, and that's all they're willing to put up is $50,000 for. But yeah, I guess if you get to that point, you know, you're kind of just stacking all of those incentives up.
That's true. I didn't really, math was never my strong suit. That's why I went to journalism. So that's a good point. Those do accumulate to make it a much bigger number. But the statue of Steve Lutz would probably cost $150K that they would build if he won the national championship. Just, you know, Marshall, you've been around him. You were at his press conference. He's had some time now to settle in as the head coach at Oklahoma State. Just having covered him a little bit with his introduction, just what's your overall impression of Steve Lutz? He obviously had some great things to say up on the podium, but, you know, doing the scrums with him, I don't know how much you've had availability since then, probably not much, but just kind of give your thoughts on Steve Lutz, the hire and kind of the person you were able to kind of listen to when he was introduced.
Yeah. So only talked to him, I guess at the introduction and then the scrum afterwards. The introduction, it's always a little awkward. It's like a press conference in front of people. It's just kind of a weird thing that happens. So you can't gain a ton from that. Obviously you guys have talked about, you know, him zinging Larry, and that's kind of the vibe I got to him in the scrum afterwards, is that he's like kind of a good kind of serious, like a personable kind of serious, which I think is a good thing. And again, this is after one meeting with him. I'm going to, you know, talk to him plenty over the years. So, I guess it's not beholden to this, but kind of seemed to the point, serious about things, but in a very personable way, which I think it has the makings of a really good, you know, a person that you'd want to be leading a program. So, but you'd ask him a question and he'd, you know, you could really almost feel him think about it, and then kind of respond. So, it's a learning process still, and I'd hate to, you know, judge his character. I base off one media scrum where, you know, more reporters are going to be there than ever. But it seems like, from everything I've gathered, a pretty good dude so far.
Yeah. I really like him. Again, he was third on my list. But he may end up being the best fit. That's kind of the vibe I've been getting from him since we learned more about him. And clearly when he was introduced, I think it's a great fit for Oklahoma State basketball. I mean, clearly he was trying to keep as much talent on campus as he could. You know, Brandon Garrison was taking visits. He went down to Norman. He was posting Instagram stories in the practice gym at Oklahoma State. So really, they lose out Brandon Garrison. He signs or commits to Kentucky, which he hadn't even apparently visited, kind of out of left field. But I guess, Marshall, that's just kind of the day and age we live in with NIL, isn't it?
Yeah, it was definitely weird. You know, you see him, Brandon, visit OU. You see him visit Texas. Then he was at Arkansas. So it kind of, whenever it got announced, like, okay, here comes his commitment date, it was like, okay, it's between these four schools. And among those four schools, it kind of felt like OSU had a pretty good shot. And then Kentucky comes in and you're like, okay, well, that, it just makes sense. You know, Mark Pope's obviously new, and that was a controversial hire to some, just because he wasn't a big name blue blood type coach quite yet. But, you know, anytime, I think I told this to you, anytime Kentucky comes and gets one of your basketball players, it kind of just feels like you lost an OC because he's going to be a head coach somewhere. So, you know, that's going to happen. It kind of stinks that, you know, all five guys that entered the portal, they weren't able to keep any of them. Did they want to? I'm sure they wanted Brandon Garrison, and I'm sure, you know, you wanted Javon Small, but I imagine those price tags got a little lofty. Javon Small goes to West Virginia, kind of came out of nowhere. It seemed like he visited Miami and Ole Miss. Then all of a sudden he committed to West Virginia one day. So, you know, I think that's just kind of the name of the game of college athletics these days. And, they'll have to hit the portal pretty hard and, get these last six scholarships filled.
Yeah. I'd heard West Virginia had a pretty, pretty good NIL program, and him, them and DeVries and West Virginia were so far down the road. I know he was a candidate that got thrown around for Oklahoma State, but based on what I had heard, that, I mean, West Virginia had a job open last summer, so they'd already done their due diligence. Clearly, had already reached out to DeVries, and he clearly had some money to work with to get Javon Small. And I just hate it, Marshall. Like, I get it from Brandon Garrison's perspective. I certainly don't begrudge him from getting as much money as he can, because that's the system we have now. Is this really what we want college athletics to be? Just the highest bidder every single year is where you're going to go play? I hate it. I get it. I'm happy for college athletes finally getting paid. I just hate the system, because it's professional sports essentially with a school name on your chest. I hate it.
Yeah. And it's professional sports, but every year is free agency. Everybody's a, you know, imagine like the NBA kind of gets the most rap about this, where players are moving, you know, left, right, and center. Just imagine if after every NBA season, everybody was, you know, a free agent again. That's what it feels like. And, you know, I don't blame the players for this, because, you know, they deserve and have long deserved, you know, a piece of this pie. And a weird, this kind of aside, a weird issue that I kind of have with it is that instead of, you know, players getting a piece of the pie, more so now, like, schools or collectives you know, kind of just cooking up a whole new pie to give to the players. It's not a piece of the pie that, at least it seems like, it's not a piece of the pie that was already existing. It's that, you know, now you're asking more of fans and followers, you know, get season tickets, but also donate to the collective, and all that. But yeah, I think this all could have been avoided had the NCAA, you know, got a grip a little bit sooner and had some guidelines kind of going into, you know, this new era of college athletics where, you know, whether that be contracts, I don't know the correct answer for it, but, you know, the NCAA kind of just got caught with its pants down and then all of a sudden everything was legal. So yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of it either, but this is kind of where we are.
Yeah. And they're going to have to do something. I don't see how this is sustainable for coaches to build rosters, for universities to maintain the level of spending, because it's going to keep going up and up, just like the NBA salary cap does. So we'll have to see. You know, Steve Letts has made a couple additions. Marquilus Avery from UCF is coming to Stillwater, as well as Robert Jennings from Texas Tech. So, too, you know, we always kind of scoff when guys from Oklahoma State stay within the conference. Oklahoma State's doing the same thing now with these two. I mean, I really like the Avery kid from UCF. I think he's a good player, good addition. Jennings seems to me more of a role player, more of a roster filler. What'd you make of those two additions?
Yeah, starting with Jennings, just because he committed first, I think he provides a need for OSU right now because they don't have any big men. And Robert Jennings isn't necessarily huge. He's 6'7", 230. But you know, he plays on the offensive glass and he kind of does some of that dirty work that I think they need right now, especially from a guy with size. So you know, you're hoping that, you know, they add some true centers in the coming weeks. And then, yeah, Marcellus Avery, who goes by Chi-Chi, we learned through the
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, that's what we learned through the release that OSU had. Has a ton of upside, but also 6'7", but more of a 6'7" wing than a 6'7" post player. He has been known to, he didn't shoot the three great. I think he was like 34% at UCF last season. But I think the year before that at New Mexico or New Mexico State, I kind of get them mixed up frequently, but, he was like hanging around 40%. So if you can get a, you know, 6'7" guy, who's athletic, like Marcellus Avery, who can shoot the three, that's not, I think any coach in the country would want that. So, yeah, if they can unlock that within him, I think that's good. And I think Robert Jennings could play a solid role. It's not going to be maybe the most flashy thing, but anybody who can get on the offensive glass and kind of wreak a little havoc down low, I think that's a welcome addition to this team right now.
Yeah, so we'll have to see who else they add. You know, you mentioned they need a big man now with Garrison gone. I mean, the writing was kind of on the wall with Garrison that they were bringing Musa Cisse back. You know, everyone remembers Musa Cisse, a Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year type guy. He won that, right, when he was at OSU?
Yeah, I think he was a two-time – he was on the all-defensive team twice, and I think, yeah, I think it was his first year. Yeah. He won the award.
Real menace inside. He went to, you know, I think I read he's transferred like every year of college and like three years in like high school. So he's used to packing his bags, but he has taken a visit to Oklahoma State. I mean, it makes a lot more sense now with Garrison gone that he could fill that void. What do you think the chances are they bring Cisse back to school?
I think it's pretty high. You know, he's also supposed to visit, I don't know if it's happened or not, Memphis, which is where he started his college career at, funnily enough. But Memphis, I think this morning, added also former Cowboy Tyreek Smith, who transferred from SMU. So I would think that, you know, that would maybe, I don't know what Memphis's scholarship situation is like. But, you know, if they're filling up with big men, I'd imagine that probably means good things for Oklahoma State and Musa Cisse. But, you know, even if they do get Musa Cisse, they need some more length. I don't think one 7-footer is going to do it in the Big 12. You're going to need, you know, at least another 6'9", 6'10 guy to come in with him. But, I think that'd obviously be a solid start. I think he should, because he's really, you know, he's freakishly athletic for being as big as he is. And with how Lutz likes to run the floor, hopefully, you know, I think Brandon Garrison might have been, you know, better fit for that type of style. But I think Musa is more than capable of rim running. You know, they didn't have a true rim protector last season. That was kind of a deficiency for Oklahoma State. So yeah, I think and it's going to start on the defensive end, you know, getting out and running. You're not going to run if you're picking the ball out of your own basket. So if they can They can get a guy that can, you know, help on the defensive end and then is athletic enough to run up floor and help with that quick offense. I think Musa Cisse would be a pretty good fit for that.
Yeah, I like Cisse. Clearly, he's much more of a defensive player and has some work to do offensively. But you're right. I think in Lutz's system, it's not as much isolation. It's more rim running, you know, getting out on the break and getting some easy buckets. So I think that would suit him quite well. So where does that leave OSU scholarship wise? How many do they have to fill? And just what's it looking like right now with state of affairs for Steve Lutz?
Yeah, so they finally have more guys on the roster than scholarships available. So they're at 7 guys on the roster. That's Connor Dowd, Jamyron Keller, Bryce Thompson, Jeremiah Johnson, the signee coming in. Then Arturo Dean, the FIU commit, Robert Jennings, and Marcello Savory. So they got 6 scholarships left. They're not good at guard, but they're obviously deeper in the backcourt. I think they need a lot of front court, and I think they kind of need some scoring. Just based on the guys they brought in, Arturo Dean, you know, obviously led the country in steals last year, but kind of more of a, you know, defensive first type guy. Doesn't shoot the three particularly well. Robert Jennings doesn't shoot the three particularly well. So I think right now a lot of your scoring is falling on, you know, maybe a Bryce Thompson, obviously, and then, you know, hoping for a big step for Jamyron Keller. So I think they need some scoring and size, which, you know, it sounds like it should be red alert that a basketball team doesn't have scoring and size. But I think they've got, you know, good depth elsewhere. There've been a couple of guys that they've been, you know, linked with. Devo Davis out of Arkansas. He's a point guard. He was on, you know, 2 Elite 8 teams with the Razorbacks. He was actually once committed to Oklahoma State before Cade Cunningham. He was in the Cade Cunningham class. He was committed before Cade Cunningham.
Oh, that's right. I remember that name. Yeah.
Yeah, and then reopened his commitment. Reopened it like kind of days before Cade committed, so it kind of seemed like Cade, you know, filled that spot. So I think that that's a solid option. You know, he's also maybe not the best, you know, pure 3-point shooter or anything like that, but a guy with experience, and he's pretty athletic and get out and run. They need some size and scoring, which sounds terrifying, but I think it's maybe not as glaring of an issue as it sounds like.
Well, and I think the one positive here, you know, besides all the uncertainty with the roster, is, you know, I had Matt Amelian, friend of the pod, friend of Pistols Firing. He was texting me just how excited he is about Lutz because of his history, really having to recreate a roster from scratch. He did that virtually at both stops he was at as a head coach. So I think that's something we're just going to have to wait and see when the dust settles, how the roster comes together. But it is kind of a reason for optimism, isn't it, Marshall, that he has this level of experience really remaking rosters from nothing?
Yeah, and that's something that you know, if you were hiring a coach that also coached in, you know, 2008 or whatever, you know, you don't know a ton about that, of a coach's ability to do that. With, you know, Lutz kind of just getting into the head coaching game, you know that he understands the transfer portal and he's, you know, used it to success. Like, I'm just trying to think of a random, Steve Alford, his name was like came up quite a bit as well during the thing. It's like, okay, does he really understand the portal, or is he just, you know, a good coach who's got years and years of, you know, experience of being a coach? Well, you know that Steve Lutz to some extent understands the portal because he's been able to use it, you know, 2 times now, once at A&M Corpus Christi and then again at Western Kentucky, to really flip a roster quick and start winning really fast.
And he has built his coaching staff. He hires Mike Ekonom. There's been some tough names for me on this podcast, Marshall, lately, but Mike Ekonom from George Mason has some history, shares an alma mater with Lutz at Texas Lutheran. So his Texas connections will come into play. And this comes on the heels of Lutz starting to fill out his staff more and more, keeping Keaton Page, James Miller as associate head coach. He brought over Robert Guster from Western Kentucky. So he's built his staff, and now it's kind of a wait and see on what type of players they're able to get. But I've been impressed so far with Lutz, both with his coaching staff and with his recruiting so far. So just any final thoughts on basketball before we shift to football?
Yeah, they just got on the staff. You know, James Miller being Chris Jans at Mississippi State. They got James Miller from Mississippi State. Chris Jans at Mississippi State was kind of like the hot name among power coaches kind of looking to take that next step up this coaching carousel cycle. So to be able to kind of swipe his right-hand man away from him, I think that was, you know, an underrated big move. Robert Guster obviously has deep Texas ties. I talked with Robert Jennings, and he said that Guster was pretty much the main point of contact for him as to getting him on the staff. So he's already proven to be, you know, a good addition. And then Keaton Page is huge for the high school ranks in Oklahoma. It pretty much everybody I've talked to during the hiring process, whether that be like recruits or their parents or whatever, they were just saying so much. They're like, "Oh, I hope they keep Keaton on staff and everything will be fine." And that ended up being a big deal with Jeremiah Johnson. So, yeah, it seems like he's putting together a really well thought out and staff that's capable of coaching at this level.
Yeah, it read like Jeremiah Johnson wanted to play for Keaton Page. All those quotes were about Keaton, which I obviously speaks really well of Keaton and his connections within the state. But I think that's another point too, Marshall. I think one of the things, Mike Boynton had a lot of things that didn't work out. We know all about those. But I think one of the things that he really didn't capitalize on was hiring a really good staff around him. I think he Maybe it's because he was a first-time head coach. He wanted to shoulder much of the blame and shoulder much of the responsibility. It didn't seem like to me, and some of the things I've heard, that he didn't delegate a whole lot. And to me, I think you hire an A-plus staff, which is certainly, you're right to point out the Miller hire. I think that was a great get. Chris Jans is on a lot of short lists for bigger jobs when it comes to a head coach. To take his number one man was a big deal. And I think Lutz building an A plus staff is so huge because, Eddie Sutton was a master at this. I mean, I kind of went on a little rant on the chamber about, everyone just wants to hire, Zach Robinson as the offense coordinator, Brandon Wheaton as the offense coordinator. They want to bring back a bunch of former players to be on the assistant coaching staff. And I, wh while Page is a certain his own person and has a history as a coach's son, like he's obviously doing a great job himself being a former player. I'm of the opinion, go hire top-notch A-plus assistants, no matter where they're from. That's what Eddie did. I mean, Glenn Cyprian had no ties to Oklahoma State. He brought in a bunch of dudes. So that to me was one area I thought Mike Boynton struggled building a quality staff. And I think so far, so good for Steve Letts on that front.
Yeah, and I think some of that kind of comes with Steve Lutz. This is a question that I asked him in the media scrum, is that he was kind of hired by guys that he didn't know a ton about. He didn't know a ton about Greg McDermott when he was hired. He didn't know a ton about Matt Painter whenever he was hired there. And he just kind of let his work precede him. And I think he kind of looks, for assistance maybe the same way. Obviously, he knew Guster's since he's on staff with him at Western Kentucky, and I'm sure that he's somewhat aware of James Miller. I'm sure that there's some link there. I've probably written about it and have just forgotten about it at this point. But I think there's probably an element to, him not necessarily needing to stay in the same bubble to make his hires because he knows the value of kind of expanding upon that.
Yeah, so that's all good signs for me. Spring football, obviously no spring football game this year with the stadium reconstruction that's going on, Marshall. I kind of spoke about this with Colby last week about just I get all the reasons why Mike Gundy doesn't want to have it, all the reasons about health and it's one less practice and recruits like to watch practice. I get all the reasons. But as I kind of mentioned, like spring games for me and the public and the media, the fans, everybody, I always thought it was a great litmus test for guys you've heard about and to see them in a game-like situation with fans in the stands. I can go over all the years of young up-and-coming players that stood out and went on to have great careers at Oklahoma State. I've always, and it's a great test for the players, like who can perform when the lights are on, when there's people in the stands. I rue the end of the spring game, but I certainly understand the reasons that Mike Gundy detailed to you as well.
Yeah, I see that argument. It's been tough for me lately to get up for spring games just because it's not that big a deal at Oklahoma State. I think maybe if it was, there's places that sell out their whole stadium for spring games and there's a bunch of hoopla around it. It's not necessarily that at Oklahoma State, and I don't know how you build it to that level. But it's tough. Like I'm personally okay without having a spring game. Just because it's like we're not in the way that Oklahoma State's been doing spring games lately, we don't learn a ton. There's usually one receiver that kind of stands out, a young guy that we're like, ooh, we're gonna watch out for this guy. I think the last person to do that was kind of Jaden Bray, however many years ago that was. But yeah, it's I think I've gotten to the point where I'm okay with no spring game. But I certainly see, I'm not gonna argue anybody who wants to have a spring game and wants to, go out and watch, their respective team. I'm not going to have any arguments against that. I certainly understand the other argument, but me personally, I'm kind of all right without a spring game.
Well, see, this is the problem. I think you are a byproduct of what Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State have turned the spring game into, or what it's not. I think there are ways to build it up. And again, Oklahoma State fan base is not Alabama. I'm not expecting, you know, a sold out stadium for a spring game, but I think the more you promote it, the more you make it a game, the more you do other things around it to build interest with concerts, things of that nature. That's what I think big time programs do. I think it can be a big deal. I mean, ESPN broadcasts a lot of other college football programs that Oklahoma State's won more games than over the last 10 years. That to me has always been the problem. Oklahoma State is a big time football school. It is a big time football program. And I think in certain aspects, they don't act like it. They don't pump the money into it to make it a big deal and to get on national television for a spring game. I think things like that matter. I mean, how do you feel about that? I just think that, does a spring game matter? Like the who plays, who scores, how many people are there? No, but I don't know. I think somewhat it's a reflection of how big your football program is and how much respect it truly commands. Because again, the Feinbaums of the world and Kirk Herbstreits of the world, they're not talking about OSU spring game because they don't have one. They're talking about every other school that has a big time spring atmosphere.
Yeah, and again, I certainly understand that argument, and anybody that believes that way, I'm totally support them in that. But I don't know. I think you're right in the fact that, you know, the only spring games that I've known really since I started coming up to school here in 2014, the fall of 2014, is like, you know, it wasn't really that big a deal. There's the big photo ops afterwards. I think a lot of the fans and especially the kids enjoy that. But yeah, it's just it's not really ever had that juice for me to get excited about. So maybe that's why. And I don't really, you know, follow other. I obviously see the big crowds and things like that, but I don't necessarily ever follow other programs close enough to the point where I, you know, kind of understand what's going on in their spring game.
Well, just picture this: Zane Flores comes in, throws two just bomb touchdowns. Juwan Stribling is just mossing dudes in the end zone. Fans walk out of that stadium going, wow, I am so fired up for football this year. Bowman goes down. Flores is going to take the keys and run with him. You got Herbstreit on there going, I mean, Oklahoma State, they're always got a Biletnikoff guy. I saw Stribling in the spring game. As silly as this sounds, I do think spring games can build a little bit of buzz for your program. I do. And I certainly understand your perspective as well. But that's my rant on spring game.
As soon as you said Zane Flores, I was all the way in. I was like, you know what? Never mind. Yeah, we should have a spring game. There should be a spring game that I have to go to. But yeah, I'm excited for Zane Flores. So you saying that might have been your whole argument right there.
Is there some buzz around him up in Stillwater?
To an extent, yes, but I'm not sure that it's maybe anything more than, you know, typical hype for young quarterback. Just seeing him, he's, you know, I saw him, I think it was somewhere during basketball season. He was walking through Heritage Hall. I think it was after like a basketball availability, and he like towered over me. I think he's like listed at like 6'4", but he, you know, in his pictures with the flow that he's got going on, maybe doesn't necessarily look to be an imposing figure, but he was huge. It seemed like,
so I didn't know he was that big at all. That surprises me.
Yeah, he looks like what you'd imagine. I guess even going back to like Sunshine on Remember the Titans, he looks like what a quarterback stereotypically is supposed to look like, which
little Trevor Lawrence-y.
Yeah, definitely. That's obviously one that he gets quite often, I'm sure, because of his hair. but yeah, I'm hype about Zane Flores, but I'm not sure yet if it's anything past everybody's always hype for the backup quarterback for some reason.
Always. You know, I like what I saw, and yeah, I do think they'll be okay backup wise with the quarterbacks they're able to keep on campus. So, having covered spring football, obviously Mike Gundy is very relaxed, very comfortable. He always is that way when he knows he has a good team. And we all certainly know about all the returning players and how this season certainly shapes up. What was kind of some of the buzz around spring? Like, typically names will keep coming up in interview situations. Just kind of open up the reporter's notebook for us and just something that you're monitoring coming out of spring that kind of piqued your interest.
Yeah, kind of an interesting spring in that, like, there's not a ton of, you know, usually go in looking for position battles or places of need where You know, hey, somebody's gonna have to step up here this year. Oklahoma State doesn't really have that just because they're returning so much. The things I'm kind of interested in is, you know, defensive ends, just because, you know, they lose Latu, they lose Goodlow. They weren't necessarily good at pressuring the quarterback last year. So it sounds like, you know, they're going to move Colin Oliver up. It seems like he's going to play along there a bit more, especially, you know, according to him, it sounds like he's almost exclusively kind of coming off the edge now. I'm not sure that that'll be the case the entire season or if this was just, you know, kind of a spring thing. But so kind of defensive end, just pressuring the quarterback, getting him off the edge. Depth at receiver is something that I'm interested in because we know Brendan Presley. We know Dejon Stribling. We know Rashad Owens. We know Talon Shetron to an extent. But past that, you know, those four guys have played quite a bit, maybe except for Shetron, who was injured, you know, both this freshman and this past year. But past that, those four guys, not a lot of known commodities. You know, Casey Dunn always churns out, you know, elite level receivers. So I don't think it's a matter of do they have, you know, somebody who could step up if need be. It's just kind of a matter of who that's going to be. So that was kind of interesting for me to watch those younger receivers. Guys' names that kept coming up, Josh Ford, the Stillwater tight end. It kind of sounds like, you know, I think Tyler Foster is going to be the you know, day one starter, the Ohio transfer. But I think Josh Ford's going to play his way onto the field just because it seems like, and looking at him, he's physically like already ready to play college football, which is crazy for a freshman, especially at a tight end position where it's obviously, you know, really physical. And the same could be said about Armstrong Notum, defensive end. Where's he from? He's from Mesquite, I believe. Mesquite, Texas. Yeah, Mesquite Horn. He was just apparently a freak in the weight room. He was a wrestler in high school. So, and like he was committed to Rice for the longest time before Oklahoma State offered him. So it's like the most Gundy recruit ever. And then he comes in and he's already, you know, a physical freak. And Nick Martin was talking about how freaky he was. Justin Kirkland, who's, you know, a brick house, was talking about how freaky he was. So that's a little exciting, the Armstrong Nadeem hype, especially considering, you know, that's kind of a position of need being defensive end, like I mentioned.
That's a resident ball knower, Adam Luntzboy. He's been calling out Armstrong Notum since they were recruiting him before he even signed with Oklahoma State. So that's certainly encouraging because, again, the D line wasn't all that great. They did have a coaching switch there. So that certainly is encouraging. And you mentioned receivers. Yeah, like you have the headliners, but there is some question marks there on the second, third rotations there. This is completely out of left field. I just saw Gavin Freeman from Oklahoma. The University of Oklahoma is in the transfer portal. Small slot, kind of Stoops-like receiver is in the portal. I don't think Oklahoma State would get involved there, but he certainly would fit a slot role with Presley coming into his last year. He played at Heritage Hall. Obviously, his dad played at Oklahoma. He was committed to Tech out of high school, so maybe he'll end up at Texas Tech. But that piqued my interest just solely because he's an in-state guy. He doesn't really fit the mold of a Casey Dunn type receiver, but he is certainly a slot guy. So I'm monitoring that just because I really liked Gavin Freeman at Oklahoma. He struggled a little bit on the back end. That's why he's probably why he's transferring, because they brought in a ton of dudes. But maybe keep an eye on that one. I don't know. I just saw that come across the timeline.
Yeah, that was interesting. I saw him enter as well. And wasn't his first – was it a punt return or was it a pass that he caught?
He did like a reverse for a touchdown.
Scored instantly. And he was a walk-on, I think, at OU. I think he had a scholarship offer to Tech, and he was like, no, I'm going to walk on to OU.
That's the case. And he had a punt return, a touchdown, I think, the first game of the year last year. Like he was very much like the buzz of OU football last fall camp. Like, so he was clearly balling out down in Norman. So I wouldn't hate that addition. Now I doubt he'll walk on. I think he's probably looking for a scholarship now.
I think, you know, it's been going so much the other way. You know, Kelly Maxwell, I'm about to go watch Kelly Maxwell pitch for OU. Obviously Trace Ford, you know, why not have one come back the other way?
Yeah, why not? I think Trace Ford's playing again this year at OU. Feels like he's been in college since you were in college.
Yeah, I'm over keeping up with eligibility at this point. I'm just, somebody wake me up whenever everybody's got 4 years again and we're out of the COVID stuff.
Yeah. One last football note. They did add a running back, Trent Howland out of Indiana. Big old boy. I mean, what was he? 6'3", 240. He rushed for a modest 300 yards last year, two touchdowns, but some depth there at the running back spot behind Ollie Gordon. They did bring in AJ Green from Arkansas, but you and I were kind of questioning this before we hopped on and hit record. And I guess there's some injury concerns there.
Yeah, it seems like he's been posting on his Instagram and stuff, AJ Green, legs in a boot. I think he tweeted that he just wants to play football. So not exactly sure the extent or how long, but it does seem like, he might be out for some time. So they go on and get Trent Howland, who I think was Indiana's leading rusher last year. I have to go check on that just to make sure. But yeah, 6'3", 240 is juicy. It kind of seems like a tone shift for Oklahoma State. Obviously, Ollie Gordon's a big dude. They signed a running back, I believe, out of South Carolina, Jaden Allen Hendricks, who is also a big dude at running back. So I wonder if that's just kind of a philosophy switch, or if they're they're okay with any type of body type there. But yeah, I think I'm a big Sezzy Vallahi believer. He's a true freshman last year. But I think he only had, maybe under 10 carries. So to get somebody experience, especially with how good this team is supposed to be, you don't want one injury, being Ollie Gordon, knock on wood, to totally derail your season. So, yeah, I think it was a smart move to kind of shore up maybe any concerns that you had there at depth.
Yeah, and Ceci, there's obvious connections with the state of Utah with Jaylen Warren. He certainly would provide a change up. It's good to have depth, but it's also good to have different type of skill sets at running back. I know he's kind of a favorite of the ball knowers for Oklahoma State, but good depth. I mean, that's key. I mean, you got to keep Ollie Gordon fresh. He I thought he wore down a little bit the last few games of the regular season, even though he scored 4 touchdowns against BYU. You wouldn't know it, but I thought he lost a little bit of juice down the stretch. So that's big. What do you make of just OSU going into this season? Colby and I have been talking a lot about disrespect's the wrong word, but I think people are just overlooking Oklahoma State and trying to anoint other programs next year in the Big 12. Utah clearly has a national reputation for what they will do in the Pac-12. Kansas State's becoming a popular pick. I know they just got the running back out of Colorado. That doesn't help my season-long bets on OSU. That's a great addition for Kansas State. Just where do you think OSU stacks up going into next season? And do you agree that with Colby and I that I think people are overlooking OSU despite returning pretty much their starting lineup on both sides of the ball?
Yeah, the Vegas win totals for Oklahoma State, it always seems like they're maybe one or two games lower than they should be. But this year in particular, it really felt like quite the slight. And maybe that's just like Vegas being Vegas. They have to make the money somewhere. So maybe that's it. But yeah, I think they're definitely on that top tier of teams in the Big 12. You maybe put, Utah in there. You maybe put Kansas State in there. Maybe below that, you've got like Arizona, Kansas, and West Virginia, I think, is going to be pretty good this year. But I'm just trying to think. And again, I think Oklahoma State's, a tier one contender. Just trying to think of maybe what why people are so off on them. Maybe, all the one score, tight games throughout last year. I think back to Houston, obviously going to double overtime with BYU, kind of just getting throttled in out in Orlando before they, or that's, post the Ollie Gordon surgence. So like, that's what I'm maybe like, maybe that's what they're seeing. Maybe they're saying, hey, they're not going to win all these one score games again. But yeah, I think, this is a team that went to the Big 12 title game against a school that's no longer in the Big 12. So why, and they, pretty much returned everybody. So why wouldn't Oklahoma? So yeah, I don't know maybe what Vegas or, people knocking that win total down are totally looking at. But to me, a team that, was in the Big 12 title game against a team that's no longer in the Big 12, should probably be at least among the favorites to win the league.
Yeah, I agree. And again, the Gundy factor, I mean, proven commodity. And I just, for whatever reason, he's just going to keep getting overlooked his whole career. I mean, the guy's a Hall of Famer and people still just don't view him in that light. I guess it's just the lack of Big 12 championships, losing to OU most years. That's just kind of skewed things on that front. But Marshall, you're about to head down to Norman for some softball, huge, huge Bedlam series. And I guess there's some Big 12 championship title implications here. There's some different scenarios. Oklahoma State wins the Big 12 if OSU beats OU and Texas has a loss, or if OSU sweeps OU and Texas has a loss. So there's some Big 12 championship implications on top of just it being Bedlam, on top of the Kelly Maxwell. A lot of storylines going into this one.
Yeah, and new stadium that will be down there. It's going to be interesting. OU's looked a little bit more mortal this year. They're obviously still, I think, the best team in the country. I think they've lost four games though, which for OU standards, it's like, whoa, what's going on a little bit. So I, you know, in Oklahoma State, the interesting part about Oklahoma State is they're so young. You know, they start a freshman at first base, a freshman at second base. Talon Edwards starts at third base, and she should be a freshman, but she, you know, enrolled in college a year early. So, kind of a very new look team. Then there's obviously the Kelly Maxwell factor. I wonder how much OSU staff's knowledge of Kelly Maxwell will help, if at all. Maybe she's changed, you know, tendencies or whatever quite a bit. So I'm kind of interested in that. Maybe OSU has a better day against her than normal, or maybe they go in thinking about all of her tendencies and kind of get lost in the sauce a little bit. So, you know, that just outside of Kelly Maxwell having, you know, been a two-time All-American at Oklahoma State, you know, the strategy of it is kind of interesting. So yeah, big time, you know, softball series coming up, and you know, it's kind of just like softball season here. It's going to roll into the Big 12 tournament, and then postseason play is going to get rolling.
Yeah, and it seems like Kenny Gajewski, his players, they're saying all the right things, right? About Kelly Maxwell. Like, clearly in the day and age of NIL, they're not gonna just totally blast her before they play her in a series. But I gotta think, Marshall, there's gotta be a little bad blood there, right? I mean, I know they're saying all the right things.
I think the girls, the, you know, I think Lexi Kilfoyle had a quote, in a story I did for her, where, you know, she's like, hey, we love her, like we're looking forward to seeing her. I think, you know, to a certain extent that's true. For the fans, it's obviously going to be a huge deal. And you know, I think we'll get Kenny's true thoughts on it, you know, after the game. Maybe this is how Kenny feels. But he's usually pretty blunt and honest, in his media discussions. So yeah, I think it would be a big deal. Obviously, you know, anybody who, if they were, you know, if you were on at, you know, KOCO, if somebody left your station and went to another station, you'd probably, you know, feel some type of way and want to do a little bit better than them. So, I think that's just going to be like some common competitiveness that gets brought out. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it, how she interacts with OSU, how OSU interacts with her. Yeah, I guess that's just, you know, we talk about the negatives of NIL and the transfer portal and all that stuff. Well, you know, the storylines that are getting written are certainly pretty intriguing.
Yeah, it's certainly a storyline we just wouldn't have in the history of Bedlam until NIL came about. So it is super unique from that aspect. But I do agree with you. Like, OU clearly still the number one team. We all know that. But to me, it feels a little like Bama the last year or so, where they're still Bama, but if you bring your best, you can certainly go out and beat them. That's kind of the vibe I'm getting from OU softball. Of course, you mentioned at the new stadium. It's a tough place to play. Patty Gasso's amazing, Hall of Famer in her own right. But it does feel like OU was really invincible the last couple of years. Doesn't really certainly feel that way this year.
Yeah, they've gone from like Greek god or goddesses to like Hercules. Isn't Hercules half human?
I think so.
They're at least half human now.
My mythology might be at its best.
Yeah, I started that sentence and then realized halfway through that I didn't know either.
Yeah, so it'll be a fun series, and hopefully the Cowgirls can take home a Big 12 title. That would be just huge. Not just for the school, but to, you know, OU. Like, I know they're gonna probably end up still playing Bedlam. They announced some of that, but man, to go and claim a Big 12 title in Norman would be really the biggest moment in OSU softball history to this point. I mean, right? I mean, I don't think there would be anything bigger that I can think of.
Yeah, that would be, and if, for OU leaving the Big 12, and it's, you know, it's been, you know, beaten like a dead horse at this point, but this is kind of like the final, you know, I guess like maybe they'll meet on the tennis court, maybe in NCAAs or something like that, but like this is the final one that is going to have a lot of eyeballs about it, and you know, maybe they meet in Oklahoma City, and that's kind of the last hurrah, but we're really coming down to the end of, you know, these two universities sharing a conference. And if Oklahoma State could go down to Norman and beat the number one softball team that's, you know, reigned over this thing for, you know, 10 years or whatever it's been, I think that would certainly be, you know, quite the hallmark for Oklahoma State. I think that's going to be, you know, a lot of Oklahoma State fans would remember that fondly for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch. Should be fun. And again, softball's just such a fun, easy watch compared to, you know, some slogs of other sports that they become with commercials and everything of that nature. All right, let's get to the toast of the week brought to you by Yuengling. America's oldest brewery for 195 years. They've been leading the way. Be sure to check out their traditional lager, famous for its rich amber color and medium-bodied flavor with roasted caramel malt for a subtle sweetness and a combination of cluster and cascade hops. Marshall, I wrote in the school paper at the Ocali. I became sports editor there. I don't know if I've ever written a sentence as well as with roasted caramel malt for a subtle sweetness and a combination of cluster and cascade of hops.
Yeah, that sounded like a not even just like a Kit Kat commercial, but like a fancy type of chocolate commercial.
Yeah, that sounds like dessert. That felt like.
Yeah.
Yeah, born from a historic recipe, it was resurrected in 1987. Yingling traditional lager is a true American classic. I would agree with that. So we appreciate Yingling sponsoring our toast of the week. Marshall, our start us off here. I'm going to go with Lindy Waters, former Oklahoma State Cowboy basketball player, still playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Just a remarkable story. I mean, he had a good career at Oklahoma State. I never really thought he would stick around the NBA as long as he has, and let alone doing it for his hometown team, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Well, he was, besides his play on the court, he was named a finalist for the NBA Social Justice Champion Award. His efforts felt in Oklahoma. He inspires and serves as a catalyst for change while supporting Native American youth and indigenous communities. So really just the full gamut of Oklahoman, played at Oklahoma State. He's Native American, playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Just stories don't get much better than that. And he's obviously using his platform for great good. So I've really enjoyed having Lindy Waters part of the Thunder, and he's obviously making a big impact in the community as well. So that certainly deserves a toast.
Yeah, and my favorite part about him being a finalist for that award, here's the other finalist: Russell Westbrook, Bam Adebayo, CJ McCollum, and Karl Anthony Towns. If you would have told me 3 years ago that Lindy Waters would be, you know, in a group of five with you know, those four other dudes, I don't know what I would have thought it was for. But yeah, his just ascendance and his ability to kind of keep working and grinding through, you know, the Enid Outlaws to, you know, playing on the Blue, it's a remarkable story.
And those guys have a lot more money for foundations, yeah, for fundraising. Like, he's not playing with the same deck and still making just as big of an impact. That's pretty special.
Yeah, I don't think any of those other four have won a G League title, for what it's worth.
Yeah, that's right. He's got bragging rights there.
So that was actually going to be mine too, but I think I'm just going to go with the New York Knicks in general. I think I'm going to go off the beaten path of Oklahoma State, because not a lot of sports going on right now. Maybe this time next week it would have been a softball player, but the New York Knicks, I don't know if you stayed up and watched that game last night, but that was so much fun. Jalen Brunson is ridiculous. He's so much fun because he's undersized and he's still, you know, scoring like 40 points a game or whatever it was. I think I saw that he scored 650 points throughout that 6-game series. Joel Embiid, I think, had 649, or maybe that was the entire team. I'm trying to think if that was even like humanly possible that he scored 640. No, because
there was a
1-point
difference between the two
the
teams.
Total points. Okay, it had to have been. Yeah, I just had Jalen Brunson averaging like 100 points a game, but honestly, you could have told me that and I'd have believed it. And Josh Hart is so much fun to me just because it's like is he a point guard? Is he a shooting guard? I don't know, but he just works relentlessly. And then he hits that big shot last night. And I think that was more so the game rewarding him for all the, you know, the kind of grinding that he's done throughout this series. So, and it's kind of just fun to not enjoy the Sixers. I don't know what it is. I like Joel Embiid. I don't necessarily like his ability to get to the free throw line as frequently as he does. But, you know, seeing the Knick fans kind of infest that arena and kind of turn it into Madison Square Garden was crazy. I just think that was a really fun series, and I'm surprised A, the Knicks got the 2 seed, but then B, that they were able to beat Embiid and the Sixers in the first round.
And Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson played college together at Villanova, which is, yeah, you know, basically Philadelphia. The two Philly boys go in there and rip their hearts out.
It was beautiful. I've been loving the NBA playoffs to this point. Obviously helps that the Thunder were pretty untouchable in that first round. Maybe I'll have a different view coming up. I'm really scared of, I don't enjoy the potential Mavericks matchup. I was in Oklahoma City for a game. They played against the Clippers this year. If the Clippers find a way out of that series, I think Oklahoma City dog walks them again.
Be coming off no rest.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little bit scared of the Mavericks, but
yeah,
bring me the Clippers.
Luka's something. I mean, sometimes that's all it takes in a series when a guy just goes bonkers. But I kind of like their odds in both of those just because the Thunder, like, it's so different than like the Westbrook Harden era where one of those guys were off the floor or both. They just had no chance to score. Like Shea goes out of the game, they're fine. Like they just have such a good offense with so many guys who can create. It just doesn't seem like they're ever not going to get to 120 points. I mean, I know they struggled in the game one against the New Orleans, but I think New Orleans has a really good defensive backcourt. I think they're going to have a much easier time scoring in the backcourt against either of those two teams.
Yeah, I think that's a fair shot for sure. Yeah, who do the Mavs put on Shea? It's not going to be, you know, Luka or Kyrie. Yeah, and then at that point, who do you put on J-Dub? So, yeah, I think it's a good matchup regardless. I would just prefer the Clippers if anybody.
Yeah, I think they're going to put Derek Jones Jr. on him, 6'6", probably their best option to guard SGA. But then you got Jaylen on the other side, so good luck, mm-hmm. Luka, and whoever else they want to put on him. But one last point on Jalen Brunson. This is where I think NBA teams just – they look so much more for potential than actual production and just what kind of basketball player you are. I mean, Jalen Brunson was a two-time national champion – and the reigning national player of the year and went 33rd overall in the second round. Like, and here he is, you know, one of the best players in the league and leading a team, you know, in the semifinals of the East. I think they just overlook, you know, production versus, you know, some Euro project. I don't get it.
Yeah. And it's remarkable given he's listed at 6'2", but you know, among NBA players that looks like 5'6". He looks so tiny out there, and his last three games were 41, 40, and 47. That's ridiculous. That's outstanding. I wasn't sure that he was a star player, a 1A player. But he obviously is right now.
Yeah, he's been special. So I'm hoping the Thunder can come out of the West. I think they're gonna have their hands full if they face Denver though. So that'll be tough for Chet and the boys inside, but it's going to be fun to watch. I'm just happy we have playoff basketball back. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hi, Marshall. Well, I appreciate it. Safe travels down to Norman, and hopefully you and the ladies can bring back a Big 12 trophy.
I appreciate that. Thank you for having me. Yeah, anytime Colby's not here, I'm happily available.
Yep. Appreciate Marshall joining the show. We'll get back with Colby and everyone next week.